My Real Estate for Chisholm and Gaiman, at home in Port Melbourne, Black Rock, Elwood and Mount Martha.
Still no Sam Gaiman this week, but Torsten Casper, good morning to you.
Good morning, Eddie. How are you?
I am well, my friend. How are you?
I'm excellent, thank you. We're missing Mr. Sam Gaiman. He's over in LA visiting his sister.
Oh, excellent, excellent. Now, today's topic, the positives of negative gearing.
Look, it's an interesting aspect given the debate that raged over the election.
Yes.
Given the result of the election, for those that may not have paid as much attention to the debate raging, obviously being in the property industry, it was one of the elements that we were most keen to actually see what the outcome would be. And that is that negative gearing really does allow individuals to buy property and claim part of the actual costs of that against their income. And what most people may or may not realise is that...
That's by investment properties.
By investment properties. And what most people may not realise, and I guess the message that was being delivered during the actual campaign, was that it really was a tax for the wealthy. But what's really interesting is...
Mum and dad investors buy investment property, so it's not really a tax for the wealthy.
It's actually not. And what's really interesting is that more than 65% of people that utilise negative gearing have got an income of $80,000 or less. So, as I say, the actual facts don't vindicate
It
didn't stack up.
No.
But look, the other important aspect of negative gearing is that it allows us to get involved in property, in an investment property, a lot earlier than we might otherwise be able to.
Sure.
So in sheer numbers, Eddie, you know, Australia has approximately about 2 million landlords. So
yes.
It's a big number. And of that, as I say, 60 to 65% in the last financial year, there was an average loss of about $10,000 is what they were claiming. So it's not a big amount that they're claiming on that off their tax. So if their income...
Yeah, but multiply that by 2 million.
Yes. But what I'm saying is that those parties are then able to claim, say, if they've got that income of $80,000, let's say, as an example, they'd be able to cut their taxable income down to $70,000, and that's the benefit.
Sure.
But for that actual loss that the government are allowing us to have, it's underpinning landlords that wouldn't be there in the marketplace that are owning properties that are, in a lot of cases, at the lower end of the rental base, which is allowing low-income earners to actually occupy rental property within areas that they want to live in that
sure.
aren't just necessarily based in the outer suburbs. They're actually apartments and opportunities for them within the inner city, if that suits them.
Here's one for you. Is it a good idea to buy a property, live in the property, pay it off for a few years, then buy another property, move into that, and have your original property turned into an investment property?
Look, with capital gains tax, often you'll find that your principal place of residence that you're actually currently living in is often more valuable than the investment property. So there's a question there as far as what is the impact of converting.
Yeah, but not if you're upgrading.
If you're upgrading, but if you're depending on what you're converting, you may want to see what the tax benefits are moving into the other property and what you're going to be losing. So really that's a question for yourself and your accountant to have a look at. What are the tax implications on the capital gains on the original property?
Yes.
And what will the benefits be looking forward on the newer home?
Sure. This is My Real Estate.
My Real Estate for Chisholm and Gaiman, at home in Port Melbourne, Black Rock, Elwood and Mount Martha.
This is My Real Estate. Thanks to Chisholm and Gaiman, we know Bayside. 9531 1245, the one central number to call for your four offices. Where are they, TK?
They're in Mount Martha, Black Rock, Elwood and Port Melbourne.
And we continue talking about the positives of negative gearing.
And also, I guess to finish off, just prior to the break, you were asking about capital gains tax. And
yes.
I guess... The capital gains tax was introduced in 1999 by the Howard government of the day. And
yes.
In essence, what you generally tend to find as a litmus test or an observation of how the cost of that tax, if an investor's made, let's just say, use a figure of, say, $100,000
in round figures
of profit when they go to sell that investment property, generally, they're going to be taxed about half. So that gives you an impact as far as why it's a big decision leaving that principal place initially and seeing what the impact on that second property is.
Sure.
So, as I say, so you generally budget to lose about half of your profit that you make over that property transaction.
Mm-hmm.
But getting back on to negative gearing.
Rewind a bit. Has any government ever thought about backing off that level of loss of capital gain? So meaning rather than losing 50%, you'd only lose 25%?
Look, I think that the part of the debate over this.
And that's a tax cut.
Yeah. So yeah. Part of the debate over this election and the themes come up during every state and federal election. You know, the three areas that do come up are stamp duty. Stamp duty is a very big impost on buying property.
And it's huge in Victoria.
And Victoria is the highest. Yeah. We have the highest rate. So that's one that always comes up in the state election.
Yes.
So, and there is talk of that being reviewed again, and I think that would be a positive. We've actually seen some incentives for first home buyers, so mm-hmm. that's been a positive. But I actually think there's room to move there. Capital gains tax again is another opportunity for the federal government to actually have a look at the impact on that. And of course, the negative gearing debate, well, that actually dominated the headlines.
Absolutely.
During this election. Yeah, yeah. For those, again, that may not have been as interested in it, the negative gearing rules are likely to stay exactly as they are. And in my opinion, I think that's a positive thing for mum and dad investors. It's also a positive thing for renters, because I actually think that it actually creates a supply that will feed the demand of renters coming into the marketplace. And we saw during the Keating era, when they removed negative gearing, it only lasted 12 months because there was a shortage of low-income homes and there was a huge impost on government resources to create community housing, which they just couldn't fulfil in time.
Sure.
And they couldn't actually raise the actual revenue. So property taxes, Eddie, are a very important resource of revenue for both state government and federal government in Australia.
Okay, so speaking of investing, now there's this term cash yield. What does that mean?
So the definition of a cash yield is basically a simple calculation which lets you compare the return of the money that you invest in different investment properties.
So to make sure that you're comparing apples with apples.
That's absolutely right, there,
yep.
Eddie.
So yeah.
Basically, if you look at it, it's the income that you're generating before tax.
Mm-hmm.
So basically the cash flow that you're getting from an investment property divided by the total cash that you've invested.
Okay, so give us an example.
So an example is, let's just say, for example, that we've got a property that is returning $20,000 a year.
Yes.
It's actually cost us $600,000 to invest in that property.
Yeah.
Our cash yield for that particular property would be 3.33%.
Okay.
So we would then have a look at...
Jeez, you're good. You did that off the top of your head.
We could pretend, Eddie, but yes. It is a power radio.
So give me another example.
So at $600,000, Eddie, we actually find another property up the road that's giving us $25,000 in return.
Yep.
So all of a sudden, we've got the 3.33% down the road.
Yes.
And the new one that you've actually found, because you're such a shrewd investor, Eddie, is actually giving us the $25,000, and that gives us a, roughly speaking, a return, a cash yield of 4.1%.
Right.
So all of a sudden, it's pretty easy which one we're going to pick. We're going to pick that one up the road.
Mm-hmm.
Based on the fact that we think the fundamentals are fairly similar. So there are the other influences apart from yield being future growth. So this is sure. The big argument, whether do you go the property that is purely on a yield investment or also capital growth investment.
This is My Real Estate. We'll be back in a tick.
My Real Estate for Chisholm and Gayman at home in Port Melbourne, Blackrock, Elwood and Mount Martha.
This is My Real Estate. We continue discussing the positives of negative gearing. TK.
Yes, and I guess just finishing off where we were there, Eddie. So when you're investing and you're utilising negative gearing and we've now looked at the cash yield rate and what the return is, you also want to have an understanding of what is important to you. Is the return important to you? Is it a balance between capital growth, so the actual likelihood of that property growing, or is it about purely about return? So, for example...
Can I answer that question?
Sure.
It depends on how old you are.
Eddie, that's exactly right, and you had no cheat notes there.
No, absolutely none.
That came straight from the heart there.
The older that you are, the less capital growth you want, the more income and monetary return you want.
And so that's why you tend to find a lot of more mature listeners may turn to regional Australia, like Ballarat
yes.
and Bendigo, where they're finding huge surges of investment because the yields are higher in the country areas, particularly with commercial properties.
Okay.
So don't just look around metropolitan Melbourne. There's some wonderful opportunities there, depending on what the profile and what you're looking for.
And landlords for commercial properties versus landlords for residential properties, the sets of rules are very different.
Yeah, they are. And there's a whole show on that, Eddie. And that's
absolutely.
That's a good topic for us to perhaps revisit, because I think we had a terrific show there a few years ago on
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely, yeah.
But again, with the negative gearing, so that, as I say, the positives are that it gives you an opportunity ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
It also creates a terrific tax incentive for you to invest in property. There's also a term out there which I guess, and the answer to it and the definition of it will make sense, is positive gearing. And so what you're actually hoping to do is that your negative gearing allows you, with capital growth and rent increases over a duration, that eventually at some point in time you've got enough income coming in from that property to actually service the debts. And all of a sudden the property, in layman's terms, is actually servicing itself through the income. So it's covering the actual cost of the loan and the other expenses.
Sure. So it now converts into positively geared property.
It does. Yeah. And so that should be the aim for all of us, to actually get to that point, because then you then borrow against the equity within that property. But guess what, Eddie?
Another property.
Yes. And then we start to grow a portfolio of properties.
Yes.
So that's the actual, I guess that's the end game for a lot of our clients. So, Eddie, so the other technical term that you'll hear when we're talking about investing and loans and gearing and so forth is what we'll call collateralized security, or cross-collateralization.
Right.
And so basically cross-collateralization is a term used to describe when two or more properties are used to secure one or more loans by the same lender. So in other terms, you've got the loans that are cross-collateralised.
You've got house A and house B, and you want to buy a house C from the same lender.
Yeah, so basically if an investor wanted to acquire a property using the cross-collateralisation method, they can structure a home loan, say, for example, of, say, $400,000, which is secured by their family home worth, say, $800,000.
Yes.
So you could use the equity in that home as additional security and purchase an investment property for, say, $500,000, while borrowing the entire purchase price and associated costs, you know, such as stamp duty. So the total sum, let's say, of the loan would be, say, $530,000.
Yep.
The combined loans would then equal around about that $930,000 in secured loans, but you'd have property, the actual net assets of the two properties worth $1.3 million.
I see, yeah.
And so all of a sudden, and the next technical term is then your loan-to-value ratio would in that situation there would be somewhere around about that 70-71% mark. So very acceptable from that point of view. So it's actually allowing you to actually gain that extra property ahead of time.
Torsten, that's where we have to leave it for this week. We'll do it all again next week.
Eddie, great show, and I think we'll have Mr. Gaiman back next week.
Excellent. This has been My Real Estate.
Wherever you go, say hello.
1116 SEN, Melbourne's home of footy.